right here is for the people.
Some of the smartest dummies can't read the language of Egyptian mummies on a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youths, cause it's not like the future depends on it. We'll save the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee them are make big money.
Right, so David, firstly, thank you for doing this. Ever since a friend of mine sent me your video, I've been trying to reach out to you and get you on the show. You know, Neil, who was actually on the podcast before, if you haven't checked it out, it's the Gran Turismo one.
I will check that.
He quoted it as being one of the best videos he saw this year. And then when I spoke to him again, he said it was the best video he's seen in his life.
Wow.
Yeah.
That I'm humbled to that. That actually blows me away. That's amazing.
Yeah, so I mean, with about 15,000 views now, I mean, congratulations on that.
Well, I have no one but to thank with Graham Hancock and all the people that helped me make it.
Yeah.
And I'm just so touched to know that people were touched by it. So that's beautiful.
Did you expect that?
Well, the only thing I was expecting was people to just look at it and not watch it, to be honest. And that's what happened for the first week. And, well, this is what I was expecting, to be honest. My experience with people and information, such as the information I'm trying to display and relay to the public, is information that people wouldn't necessarily take the time to look at, because it forces them to reevaluate their society, reevaluate their values and all that. They don't want to look at that kind of stuff. But when my favorite author, Graham Hancock, shared it on Facebook, that shocked me. He recognized it and shared it, and that's when the views started coming in. And now I'm completely surprised. So I'm just blessed that the purpose of this documentary is actually being fulfilled. It's being seeded into the minds of the people. So I didn't expect it, but I'm blessed for it that it's happened. So
yeah, it seems like, you know, what you're doing, and you know, some of the podcasts that are out there, you know, it's like we're all on the same team. You know, yeah. Heading in the same direction, and everyone has like their own medium.
I feel you all across the planet, man. Trust me, it's an awakening that's happening through the mind, through the awareness of the human condition. It's just, we are all in the same struggle, and we and different parts of the world are all awakening at a different pace. And I'm just blessed to know what's happening. Like before, you know, not even long ago, 5 years ago, I thought it was just me thinking these kind of things. And then I talked to one guy downtown Toronto, and I'm like, well, does someone else think about this? And now 5 years later, I'm like talking to you guys across the world. It's amazing. It's happening. It's a revolution that's happening slowly, a revolution of love and truth. That's how I see it as.
Damn straight.
Yeah, and it's through this thing called Skype.
Yeah, man. It's through the...
We're not paying for this. It's like it's free, and we're speaking from across the world. It's insane.
Tools that we've been blessed to use. I mean, I never thought of using Skype to do stuff like this until like a few years ago when I seen podcasts. I'm like, wow, this is actually real. You can use these things that people just take for granted, and we could use them to actually start a movement or start a change or just speculating thoughts and ideas to create a change. I mean, if you think about it, all the stuff that I talk about, I'm just simply carrying it from the other, from the people from before me, from the references, from people like Albert Einstein, or people like Martin Luther King, or people like anyone who's revolutionary, Bob Marley, John Lennon, anyone who's just speaking the message of love.
Standing
just
on the shoulders of giants.
Essentially. That's what I'm saying.
The only reason why we're here is because we are standing on the shoulders of giants, basically.
All of us, man.
But what I loved about your video is that, fine, you know, not all your videos, but it's the way that you've put them together and the way that you use the music. And is all the narration, is all that you? The words and the production?
I actually wrote the scripts, but the narration itself is done by my friend Alexander Eccleston.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a really good friend of mine, man. I remember when I first chilled with him, I took him to see Avatar in 2009. And he came out of that movie theater looking at the parking lot like, what is this? What the was like, what have we done to the planet, man? Like, he was just blown away by the awakening of the movie. And
it's a very precious moment, that one, isn't it? I mean, it's not specifically on that topic, but there's so many other, you know, awareness-related kind of revelations that when they strike, it's...
Yeah, like when I first saw Zeitgeist, I was...
Amen, brother. Amen to the Zeitgeist. Jason showed me about that. You know, the first like 10 minutes, it just rocked my religion to the core, man.
You know what I mean? Like 10 minutes of information that you haven't heard before can instantly revolutionize who you are and what you thought you are. You know what I mean? Mm. Brings everything into question. And it's simple. It's words. Like, we're not forcing it upon no one. Mm-hmm. It's just ideas that are just speaking to themselves. Yeah. The beautiful thing about the truth is that it's the truth. I mean, it will be standalone, solid, the truth. And no one or nothing can misinterpret it to the fullest of extent of which no one will believe it at the end of the day. Because there will only be one person who will be linked to the truth, in my opinion. Like, we've seen this, like... when Jesus was like, if he was supposedly alive back then, which I think he was. I think he was just a person who was aware of humanity as being disconnected from some natural order of things. And he was just going around saying, hey, let's love each other. We're connected. We're one. And the societies of those times, the Roman Empire, didn't want that to happen. They wanted their empire to be fully organized and fully expanding and conquering and destroying as it was. They wanted the people to be stuck at one state of thinking. And what Jesus was doing was revolutionizing their ways of thinking. So what they did, they just put him on a cross, they crucified him, they humiliated him, and the very act of wearing a cross, in my opinion, is the success of the Roman Empire's FU to Jesus, basically. Because we focus too much on that action and not about who he was, in my opinion. Like, people are more so, like, patriarchal about their Jesus Christ, you know? Jesus didn't want no Vatican built for him, no castle gold, no man wearing a big cape with a golden staff. No, he just wanted people to love each other. And loving each other is not this corny idea of, oh, so let's just be one. No, it's, we could build a civilization that is completely different from this one in terms of the technology we use, our empathy towards the earth. We could revolutionize what we choose to do with our lives. You know what I mean? Like, so many things can occur from the act of loving each other unconditionally. It's just an idea that's been suppressed thousands of years in all these empires. But I think it's like the mushroom mycelium. It will always overcome. No matter what damage will occur to the earth, it will push to the asphalt. It will grow. Yeah. And that's how love is. That's how it's
true. It's funny because Joe Rogan talks about, you know, one time being on Ecstasy and like he ended up holding hands with his friend and they were rubbing thumbs. And he's like, you know, it felt so good at the time.
Yeah.
But you know that you never had that kind of, you know, sensation before with a guy, but you know, under this, you know, I think it was ecstasy, but you know, he had this, it just felt so nice and so right just to do that.
Because with ecstasy and empty work, simply it strips your ego away so that you will just be this core innocent being and you'll let go of these thoughts of limitation and constriction, and that will definitely allow you to, like, hold the man's hand and say, fuck it, I love you, man. Like, I love everyone here. Like, we're all in this together. Like,
I'm a big hug giver to my friends. I'm a big hug giver.
Exactly, man. Yo, I give hugs. I don't care. I'm just saying, I love you, man. Like, we're all alive. We're all going to die. I'm not going to limit my mind to some social constriction just because it makes me feel insecure. Right. Screw that, man. I just want to be alive, you know what I mean?
So how do you best describe the, the Awakening of Gaia? First of all, if you want to find it on YouTube, it's just go down to YouTube, Awakening of Gaia, Gaia, right?
Yes.
So if someone asks you what's it about, how do you describe it? Because I've tried to describe it to a few people, but it's just like...
It's so much.
Too many paradigm shifting ideas. And Yeah, so how do you describe it? You just say, watch it.
Well, basically, I just say, watch it. But what I try to say is how do I put this? I usually, depending on the person, I say different things, but in a general sense, I would usually say it would lift the veil that conceals the truth of reality. Like, and then I go on saying how we can only see 0.005% visible light and then all that kind of stuff. And I just say, basically widens your perspective. That's the best way I can put it. Like in a sentence, I say you should just say, watch it. It will widen your perspective in a way that may change you.
Yeah. So the way I've been telling people, I say, watch it. And if you don't learn anything from it, you're an idiot.
Yeah, that's how I would talk to people when I would be like, yo, watch Zeitgeist or watch Avatar or watch a specific documentary that would generally, if you're not completely stupid and if you understand English, it would definitely change the way you think about reality. I mean, the only excuse I see in people who don't take the time to like look into these things, understand it, or people watch it and still don't get it, I don't think they're necessarily watching it to learn. I think they're watching it to get through it. Or they're just like focusing on specific things and not looking at the whole picture as it should be. I mean, if you just focus on a part when you're building a car, I mean, you're not going to build the car. You know, you're just going to have to do one perfect part. The whole car is going to be not there. You know, I mean, it's just perspective. And their perspective is based upon the knowledge that they have taken in their lives, what they've read, what they've experienced, what they've watched. And if they don't have the necessary experiences or the necessary knowledge to understand, let's say, how the economy works, you're not going to understand how the economy is a big freaking slave industry. You know what I mean? Like, it's completely gripped the human mind in such a way that they can't see that you can simply live in a society that doesn't need money. So if they don't understand all of that, they will not be able to make a connection. You know what I mean? So it's all of that. I mean, you could give someone a book like To Kill a Mockingbird, which is a book that would change the thinking of sociology and how the society was formed and how the segregation between black and whites was an issue. How not even 50 years ago that if a black person was seen as an alien, like that's so messed up. Just by the word of mouth, you could change perspective. That just shows how the human brain is essentially a sponge that, depending on its set and setting and who it exposes itself to, the other individuals it exposes itself to, it will shape depending on that. And especially if you're chilling with those people from time, even if you didn't want to. I mean, okay, take this in. The way I talk now, you can hear there's a little slang in it. That's Scarborough slang. I didn't always have that. I was very formal in my talk, but over time of chilling with people for like 10 years, I lost that whole formality in the way I speak. You know what I mean? There's a slang there. It's all because of the conditioning that your brain goes into when it's exposed to certain things.
Yeah, so the way that I see that is, well, the way that I was taught it recently is that the brain is a muscle and it can grow, just like when you go to the gym and lift weights. You see a clear result. In the same way, the brain, you know, into what you mentioned through meditation, right? And also through doing these exercises, like being mindful. I mean, there's certain exercises that you can do. You know, there's a whole kind of a wave of people doing that nowadays. And it's proven to have, there was a TED talk about it as well.
Yes.
I can't remember the lady's name. But it was
really a TED talk. I know which one you're talking about.
I'll post it up, you know, under this episode, but you know, with direct correlation to, you know, certain exercises and growth in certain areas of the brain.
Yes, like for instance, when the very act of meditating, it's more than just sitting in a so-called ridiculous position and breathing in and out. Now, okay, you're in a stance where you're stretching out your muscles, allowing the blood to flow, and what happens when the blood flows is that your brain operates 100% more clearly than it would have if you were being stagnant. You know what I mean? This is after, I would say, you do a yoga sesh when you're breathing and stretching your body so the oxygen could flow into your lungs, mm-hmm. through all the red cells in your body, flowing into your heart and out of the breath of your mouth. It's a beautiful connection when you actually look into what happens when you're.
But couldn't you argue that you could get the same result by playing a bit of football or, you know, playing badminton like I do? I mean, isn't that?
Definitely, you would get the same result. It's an activity, but the difference is if you're playing badminton and if you're doing yoga, there's a different adrenaline rush. Then there's a different chemical reaction when you're in a competitive mode. Your brain is operating on a different,
the reptilian brain?
You can say reptilian brain, yeah, it's like fight. It's like fight or flight.
Yeah, basically, you know, depending on the opponent, like, if someone's a lot stronger than you, you have that strong flight mechanism that's kicking in.
Yes, you're right.
If you feel a strong advantage, you've got this big fight. You know what I mean?
You feel that rush, you know what I mean? It's a different mindset than when you're just in your own space, breathing calmly, not trying to think competitively, but to not even think at all. Yeah. Silencing your mind. And when do we ever get to silence our minds in this world? Never. We're always on our cell phone, we're always looking on the computer, we're always working, we're always going here and there, anywhere. Mm-hmm. It never happens. But when you take the time to let your mind silence, and I can tell you right now, the mode that your mind will get to when you're breathing and doing these stretches, you'll see what I mean, that it's more than just stretching. If anyone's listening to this, you'll see what I mean. It's more than just stretching. You feel this energy. And I can understand why the Hindu people call it the chakra kundalini energy, because it truly feels like you are becoming enlightened from the bottom up. Like, you feel it throughout your body. And at the end of the whole yoga session, when you're in the meditative position, everything is just so beautiful. The thoughts you start having. I mean, like, I looked at my cat before. Okay, I'll give you an example. Let's say I'm having a really, like, bad day, and then my cat's meowing, and I'll be like, oh man, this cat just wants attention all the time. But if I were to do a yoga session, meditate, I would understand that the cat wants to play because his natural instincts has this urge to want to chase and hunt so that he could develop a strong, healthy mind, so that he could live a full, healthy life. But if you neglect that, you know, he'll become depressed. And that's why fat cats are angry cats, because they've been neglected to eat a lot and they're angry. I start thinking about stuff like that after I meditate. It makes you more intelligent, I swear to you.
Yeah, because on my last podcast, it came up, you know, the subject of meditation.
And, oh, Sophia.
Sorry, yeah, not meditation, but yoga, sorry. I said, you know, I'll do it. I'll do it for a month, and I'll kind of track as best as I can, you know, what the effects, and if I feel better, et cetera, et cetera. And so she sent me a couple of videos, and I began it yesterday. And, you know, so far, so good.
Oh, yeah? How did you feel on the first initial session? Did you feel a difference in your cognitive, like, thinking? Was there a difference in your mood? How did you feel?
I felt relaxed, like I knew I would. And, you know, it felt more like good for the muscles, because, you know, like I said, you know, doing a lot of sport regularly, aches and pains, and then doing that, you know, you stretch everything out before bed, it makes sense, and, you know, psychologically it felt good.
Stretch, lean, and tone all at once, actually, yes. It's a beautiful thing too, especially if you're athletic. I'm not athletic. I'm actually getting into jiu-jitsu. I'm more of a fighter kind of guy. But if you're an athletic guy, yoga, power yoga, or Pilates is the thing for you. Trust me, it will stretch you. It will even stretch the ligaments. Mm-hmm. It won't necessarily stretch them, but it will actually lubricate them, so that you won't have that chance of the bones when you're older to be grinding into each other. Like, because what happens over time, the motion of your joints, the movements in walking and swinging and all that stuff, actually wears down your ligaments, so that when you're older, your bones will start rubbing against each other. But if you do yoga, it actually releases this thing called synovial fluids, which is WD-40 for your joints. It's pretty amazing. It only does that when you're doing specific stretches. specific stances to, and it's not even just the stances. We're not trying to get into a ridiculous looking stance just for the looks of it. No, this is actually working specific joints, specific parts of your body. And that's just on a physical level of the benefits. I mean, on a mental level, it actually calms you down. It makes you more passive. It makes you more empathetic. Like, I remember the difference in the first month. I was a very arrogant kid, man. Like, I would think that I would know everything. I'd get into people's faces and stuff. But then after I started doing yoga and started meditating, I really calmed down. I really saw myself from a different perspective. Hmm. That made me change as a person, you know what I mean?
And how long ago did you start?
I actually started 2 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, man. So I've been doing this consistently almost every day. And I cannot, at this point in my life, wake up and not do yoga. I literally feel the muscles cringing and twisting up and tangling. And it's an uncomfortable feeling. I just have to do it. And I feel great. I feel like the pains I used to have.
You know what? When I wake up, I feel fine. I don't have no urges to go and do stretches. I feel great when I wake up.
Oh, trust me, man. After you do yoga for a year, you will not want to stop. You will have to do it. You'll feel that this whole time you were just getting used to this uncomfortable feeling. Trust me, man. Like, the stretches are good, but the feeling you get when you release the knots in your spine, man, it's amazing. Like, at this point, I can flex my whole body like how Bruce Lee did when he was wrapping his forearms around his ankles. Like, I can do that now. Oh, shit. It feels amazing, man.
Wait, I can't touch my toes. Seriously.
Oh, say a word, man. You can't touch your toes, or you can't?
I cannot.
Oh, man, trust me.
No, but I went to see an osteopath last night, actually, and he's given me a few exercises to try and make me a bit more nimble.
Yeah, so, man, forward folds will get you, like, if you do a forward fold right now, or not right now, but I'm saying if you were to do a forward fold and you were to do the breathing, the proper inhale and exhale through the nose, through the nose and out the nose, and you do it consistently 10 seconds per inhale, 10 seconds per exhale, you will actually slowly sink down further. Even though you feel the tightness, you feel the pain, you'll actually get through, you'll push through that. And what yoga has taught me is that through any pain I experience in my life, just simply breathe through it. Whether it's an emotional pain or if it's a physical pain, breathe through it. I broke my head actually 2 months ago. I got into a stupid Bickerman and punched the wall. it wasn't necessary. I was not thinking clearly.
Yeah.
But what happened was I got my hand fixed within the next hour, and there was no pain medication. There was no painkillers. They just pulled my finger together, and I breathed through that entire ordeal. And believe me, if I didn't do yoga, I would have been screaming and crying like a baby, but I wasn't. I was just breathing, and it actually felt good when they were readjusting. So it gets you through a lot. And it's interesting to know when females are pregnant, giving birth, they have to go through a breathing technique in order to go through the pain, in order to pass the pain by, so it won't be as intense. Yeah.
Well, I really got into the concept of breathing about 2 months ago. I started watching a lot of Hicks and Gracie on YouTube, and he does this thing with his stomach. And for those that don't know, yeah, he's part of the Gracie family, and they're basically the family that brought jiu-jitsu, you know, that ground style and the choking into the Western world. And that's basically what the UFC is nowadays. You know, every time they go to the ground, you know, they're doing these jiu-jitsu moves. Yeah. And he would make his stomach, you know, he could do that wave that a lot of people do, but he does this, you know, he can move it to the left, to the right, up, down.
Oh.
And the manipulation of his stomach was insane. And he explained it. He goes, it's just deep breathing. And he does this thing where he breathes in like really fast, and he goes, every time I'm doing that, my diaphragm is going up and down, and go, so it's mirroring, you know, the inhales and the exhales. And he says, like, because I tried it myself, and I could actually feel like I could do it like maybe like a centimeter to the left and a centimeter to the right. you know, I started to get this little tiny bit, and I'm like, I see, if you did that, you know, as a guru for like all your life, how you could just master it. And it's basically all the organs kind of shifting. And as I was doing it, it kind of like felt a bit weird. I had a bit of a stomach ache because I could feel like I was kind of, you know, just jingling things around a bit in there.
Yeah, I could imagine how if you didn't master that, you could totally mess yourself up. I mean, that's serious. That's a serious control of your diaphragm. I mean, I wonder how long that guy could breathe underwater for. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's amazing control of your breath.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he really emphasizes the importance of that in, you know, in jiu-jitsu. You know,
yes.
Because a lot of the chokes and the holds, you don't realize it, but it takes so much out of the arm. You know, when someone, when you watch it, I've been watching so much of the Ultimate Fighter. I just downloaded, like, you know, all the seasons on iTunes, and I went through them. But you know when, if you hold a choke and it doesn't work, then your arm's dead. You know, the fighters really struggling to punch after that, or keep their guard up, because
it's, you know, the lack of acid. That's what it is. It's true. It's what happens is if you don't have a proper cardiovascular breathing technique, your muscles will atrophy while you're trying to push through in a tough endurance situation. It will release this thing called lactic acid, and that basically cringes your muscles. It makes you tense up, and you won't be able to operate as fluently and efficiently as you would if you were to breathe properly. So yeah, he's right. Breathing is totally essential for jiu-jitsu, for any kind of sport, actually. Breathing is actually a very underestimated thing. There's things in nature that we don't fully understand. And if we just understood the healing power of air and water and efficiently used it, we could rid ourselves of many diseases and many physical obstructions that we wouldn't normally be able to deal with.
Yeah. Well, one of the bits of your video that really struck a chord with me was in the series of shots about you go through evolution fairly quickly.
Yes.
And you mention the evolution of, you know, once the whole through the water onto the land, there's this evolution into a mycelium. Now,
yes.
I don't know too much about it, but, you know, it sounds pretty significant, because ever since then, it's basically what allows trees and plants to...
Essentially, yeah.
To get their nutrients from. That's almost like that catalyst in between.
Essentially, if you were to drop a nuclear bombardment across the whole planet and wipe it completely devoid of life, I guarantee the first organism that would start growing is mushroom mycelium. And what it would do is it would eat the minerals. And if you actually look it up, Paul Stamets, that's the guy in the TED Talks who was talking about mycelium, the specific processes it goes through to just spawn out into existence is amazing. It literally grows from a specific mineral in the crust of the earth. And it will grow out to then die. And its disintegration will cause the fertilization for the next generation of soil to grow. So its carcass essentially dissolves into soil,
yeah,
a specific type of soil, which allows a specific type of plant to grow. And I believe that the first type of plants to grow are dandelions, weeds, those type of plants. They die, their nutrients goes into the soil, the diversity will continue, more plants will grow. Billions of years, eventually you will get trees, eventually you will get this the proper landscape to sustain various different types of life, from insects to animals. So the reason why I actually went through that part quickly in the documentary was that I'm targeting a teenage audience, man. Like, these kids are not going to sit there and listen to a very scientific explanation unless they themselves want to just use my documentary as a reference point to then look deeper into these.
Yeah, but I think the big ideas that it suggests makes it different to other videos. I think that's what, you know, might attract the younger generation, because, you know, what is younger generation? I'm 32, you're 21, right?
Yeah.
You know, what is younger generation? Are we talking, you know, 16-year-olds? I mean, I think even people, my generation, around, you know, the young 30s, the late 20s, a lot of my friends are not... you know, a lot of the issues that you talk about, you know, they're not familiar with. And, you know, some of them are quite out there.
Yeah, you guys grew up in the 80s, man. Like, the amount of information that you've seen compared to the amount of information I've seen is radically different. I've only known the internet. So,
yeah.
I've obtained I went through a session of 6 years, I remember, when I was in grade 6 to grade 12. And I was just reading various different points of information that would lead me to other information that if I didn't have that tug in the next direction to that would lead me to that information, I wouldn't have made the connections necessarily to come to the conclusions I've made. And my conclusions they're simply the collection of various different facts, scientific facts.
Yeah, and you arrived at the answer, you know, based on...
Yeah, like, it's very obvious to me once you have the proper information to see that the Earth is a living organism. And that's something that people aren't really, familiar with or even think about. They even ridicule people who think the Earth is alive. And I understand. I mean, like, you're outside. You're looking at these roads, these buildings. You're seeing... What appears to just be a flat land and a sky. It all appears normal. It all appears how it should. And the problem with that is people accept the world of which they were presented with.
Yep.
And if we actually take the time, and that's actually a quote from Truman Show, by the way, brilliant movie, but if we actually take the time to look into how the biological systems of this Earth operate, even within ourselves, we can see that we are connected to a universe that is infinite. I mean, take this. We look at our subatomic particles, atoms. We consider that to be the finite. But just recently, when we used the particle collider to try to discover how the universe was made, we realized there were smaller particles than atoms called bosons. We call them bosons. And to think that that's the limit, I don't think so. I think that no matter how deep you go or how far out you go, you will find infinity. Yeah. The structure of an atom, to me, resembles the structure of a solar system. And it is in the fractal design. Do you guys know what fractal geometry is? I mean, no, everyone that's listening to this should.
I've heard the term fracking thrown a lot recently, but, you know, I haven't dug into it.
Oh, man. Okay. After this podcast, man, I definitely recommend you guys look up The Hidden Dimension of Fractal Geometry. That's what the documentary is called, The Hidden Dimension. And
The Hidden Dimension of what?
Of Fractal Geometry. Now, what fractal geometry is essentially a form of mathematics describing the nature of our universe. So when we look at a tree, we can now see that there is a mathematical formula to how that tree was designed, per se. It starts off with a trunk, it then splits off into, let's say for the sake of argument, two branches. And those two branches at the end of their tips will then spawn two more branches, and so on and so on and so on, until you get what the structure is, a tree. It is through simple repetition that nature creates what we see to be complexity. And when I learned about fractal geometry, it gave me the proper piece to the puzzle to make me see how the universe is in fact a massive, infinite, self-replicating, living fractal, and that we are a part of. The design is right in the veins when I can see that we are connected to the trees, or in my lungs, or in the systems of any water system you see from a satellite, or any living system. You can see how there's a design that resembles branching.
So just to go, because I mean that's pretty interesting.
Oh, yeah.
So you're saying that we've kind of figured out how to calculate how trees grow,
essentially,
and then we can recreate that.
We can recreate essentially a scale model of the universe based upon the self-repetition in its design. So basically, what I'm saying is this. I think that this entire universe is a massive living organism in which we are subatomic particle living organisms that are living in that. And that if you look into us, we are in ourselves a universe. The space, okay, the atom is 99% empty space. The entire mass of the atom is located in the nuclei. And that's like, as Neil deGrasse Tyson showed in the show Cosmos, it's like a point of a pen inside a massive cathedral. That's the scale model of an atom. So when we take in what we are made out of, we are simply a universe. And we're not separated from the rest of the air or the particles or anything we see. Because at the subatomic level and beyond, it is all space. Just like how what we see out here from our perspective is all space, stars separated through vast distances. But if we were to grow into a macro, if we were to expand our size from 10 to the power of 31, we would see that the universe, the structure of the galaxies, actually resembles what looks like a brain neural network. You could actually look this up. The brain cell universe. It's right in the Google images. It's really crazy. It's the image of all the galaxies formed in the structure and the positions that they're in, actually together looks like a flowing network of protons and a neural network.
Because that bit is highlighted quite clearly in your video, and I really kind of was drawn into that.
Yeah.
And so when I spoke to my other mate, Bohan, one of the other co-hosts, I said it as enthusiastically as I could, and I tried my best to represent the story. And
yeah,
he it's good to have someone that, you know, kind of like thinks, you know, devil's advocate. But he's saying, okay,
it's always good,
you know,
to have it.
Through, like, as you even mentioning before, the way that through pure coincidence, you know, one thing may appear to look like a membrane. And, you know, going back to the mycelium, the fact that they, just as humans do, a living organism, they inhale, was it carbon dioxide, and they exhale oxygen. I mean, the vice versa.
Oxygen.
Yeah, so they inhale oxygen and exhale carbon dioxide, right?
Yeah.
Which is not what plants do, because plants do the opposite.
Exactly.
Yeah, so they're pretty unique in that fashion like we do. And the fact that through the underground network, they're connected. And like you said, like the way that they grow is, you imagine, you know, an arm spreading off into another arm, then that's into two arms, and it's just, the word they use is networking, right?
Yes.
And he goes, I present to you the idea that this is, what's the word that he used?
It was a sentient.
A sentient being. And, yes. You know, so I checked up, you know, what does sentient mean? And because it's pretty interesting.
It's pretty interesting to think that...
Yeah, having sense, perception, conscious, experiencing sensation or feeling.
Yes.
So the idea, when I thought of it like that, it's like, well, you know, this is like basically an inverted stomach.
Oh, yeah.
Or inverted body parts, yeah. So it's living, you know, breathing, you know, like we do. And so he asked me, my friend, he said, well, is it aware like we are? You know, and you can't prove that. And he said, well, until you can prove that, you know, like Bertrand Russell says, you know, if you can't prove it, then just let it be. You know, don't spend the time.
But there is actually proof that it is aware. This is what Paul Stamen said. He said that our footsteps, when we rock across the landmasses of a forest or a field, that through the microscopic point of view, you could actually see the mycelium move out of the soil and collect debris left behind by our footsteps. It's actually pretty eerie. Hmm. When I actually heard that, I was like, what? So, what?
No, but isn't that, again, couldn't that be like, you know, through evolution? I mean, because, you know, when you look at the plant, when you watch the BBC, you know, David Attenborough documentaries, every time you watch it, it blows you away, no matter what kind of, whether it's plants, insects, you know, in the ocean, whatever. You know, it's... Can that not just be through evolution? That's what they do. And, you know, when one tree falls down, you know, other trees will grow in its place, you know, so they fight for that sunlight. You know, so naturally, if you know, a human footprint steps into that thing, because I saw that, I heard him use that as an example. You know, you walk through a field and then the footprint that you leave. But isn't that just simply the tree gets knocked down and in its place, you know, people are fighting for the sunlight, people are fighting for the nutrients, the debris.
Yeah.
You know, could that not just be that that's evolution and that's coincidence, that, you know, or you can interpretate it, you know, anthropomorphism, when you kind of take these human emotions and the human thinking and you apply it to animals or to, you know, situations like this, you know, and sometimes it falls really nicely into place.
I feel you. Yeah, yeah. Trust me, I went through a series of self-interrogations. And honestly, man, the way I look at it is this. The whole planet is constantly evolving. Everything in evolution happens because it is adapting to its environment. And it will do what it needs to do to survive, whether it's plant or animals. I mean, plants, yes, they do move to the sunlight because they're trying to reach up the sun. Yes, that's all part of the programming through their DNA. But that in and of itself is what I'm saying the intelligence lies. The fact that it knows, the fact that these things are programmed from the level of DNA. I mean, when I think about that, like, they're programmed to do these things, yes. That in and of itself is what amazes me. That's the intelligence. It's not that I think it's like it's some like God DAD that's living and feeling and loving. I mean, like, we can interpret that as love, but what's happening when we're feeling love? That's in and of itself biochemicals reacting. Unless there's another force that we're unaware of that pulls things together. That's another thing in and of itself. But the whole process of these plants doing what they're doing, the mycelium doing what it's doing, how it's all, whether through random chance or not, it's all connected, self-reliant on each other. I mean, self-reliant. It's interdependent on each other to survive.
Yeah, so if you're at home kind of questioning what's, you know, what we're talking about, you know, picture the, if you've seen Avatar, you know, I think that's a good way to kind of identify with it. You know, the scene that you put on where the lady from Alien, she's explaining that, you know, this world is connected, the Avatar world, they're all connected through this underground network of these membranes.
Yes.
And that's how the whole planet survives. You know, everything is one and it's all connected through this chain. And they can actually plug themselves in, you know, literally.
When I saw that. Sorry, I just put this thing.
Yeah, go on.
When they actually physically represented the connection that those people had to their planet, it was, to me, a metaphor of how, not physically, but okay, I don't want to sound ridiculous when I say this, but I think it's through psychedelics that we connect to the Earth, especially if it's mushroom mycelium. The reason being I'm saying this is because the way cells communicate is through chemicals. The way our brain operates is through neurons communicating with certain types of electrochemical reactions. And when I look at mycelium and I know it knows what it's doing in terms of providing feeding all the plants in the vicinity. I think when it sporulates into the mushroom, especially into a psilocybin mushroom, I think when we consume that, our brain is being communicated through the fungi, and it is the thoughts that we are getting during the actual experience that is the message from the mushroom. I believe the feeling of love, connectivity, the feeling of infinity, wanting to question, I feel like that's all the thought representation of the chemical reactions through those cells communicating essentially from the plant to the human or from the fungi to the human. And I think Avatar represented that physically through connecting to animals and through connecting to the plants.
Yeah, well,
that's pretty crazy, I know.
it is pretty crazy, but Jason and I may or may not have gone to Amsterdam and partaken in a mushroom experience.
Yeah, man, that was some crazy stuff when we first done that. Five or six years ago.
We managed to stay at a 5-star hotel.
Yeah, because it was my birthday at the time, innit?
The Krasnopolsky.
Grand Krasnopolsky, yeah. The best hotel in Amsterdam on the square.
Oh, real.
Yeah, and we had and at the time we had booked the room, I think, and then they had overbooked, and so they put us in they upgraded us for free, and so we had this room
looking out onto the square in Amsterdam. I mean,
that sounds good to
you. Yeah. You know, like floor to ceiling windows that you just open out into a little balcony onto the whole
some huge
square.
Curtains, and we had heated baths, and it was some crazy stuff.
Nice.
You know, that's the backdrop for this craziness that took place.
Because first of all, the
mushrooms were disgusting.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because originally we had thought mushrooms as in, you know what I mean, they kind of look like mushrooms. But to our surprise, when we had gone to these in Amsterdam, they call it smart shops. Where you can buy these. I mean, at the time, I think they were still called magic mushrooms. But if you go now, they call it truffles. You know, there's some sort of...
No, they don't call it truffles. They are truffles. They banned mushrooms, but they're allowing truffles, which has a similar... You know, the DMT qualities that make you just like...
And so we went into this smart shop, and there's like... It's literally like a menu. And there's like levels of like, you know, how strong they are or whatever like that. Yeah. And there was ones... The ones we took were called... What are they called? They were called Hawaiian, I think. They were basically, like G said earlier, we had asked the man, we were like, you know, it's our first time taken, and we don't want to be tripping out too much, or you know,
at all. Actually, we didn't know what we wanted, but when he went in, there was a scale, and it had a picture of different mushrooms, and next to each mushroom was like
different strengths.
You know, how strong psychedelically, and you know, and you know, laughter wise,
and like you know, for there was even ones I think sex drive as well, like you know, made your sex drive higher and all this kind of shit, and so we were like, boy. Me and G are by ourselves in the hotel room. We don't want nothing to make our sex drives higher.
Yeah.
So we were like, give us something that's just gonna make us laugh, innit?
Yeah.
And then he goes, ah, you know, because it's your first time, like start off with half a box or whatever like that. Me and G said, G's currently run out of a beer.
Oh no.
Yeah, it just started fizzing up. So we basically said to ourselves, all right, cool, we're gonna start off with half a box, and then eventually, we said to ourselves, it's not really working. So we just went through the whole box, which is like 10 grams.
Woo!
Yeah, so it was a good amount. Yeah, it was 10 grams on the box. That's what a box comes in.
I don't remember how much it was or whatever, but I remember
small boxes, are called, they're 10
just
grams.
Chewing it down as fast as I could. And everyone was like, oh, you know, chew it so you get all the...
juices.
All the juices.
Yeah, and basically we ate it with something as well. They suggest not to, but because it tasted so nasty... I think at the time we started eating them in a coffee shop, and we were like drinking a milkshake, and we said, shit man, we better get back to the hotel room just in case anything starts going down.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, things are
And it's funny because on the way there, you know, in Amsterdam, there's loads of like rivers. We stopped at the river and we were like, let's look at the water, and it definitely started changing. Something definitely was going on. Like originally, this was about, I would say 15, 20 minutes after we had already started with half of it. Because I remember we had half in the coffee shop originally, and we went back to the hotel room. And we just chilled out for a bit, and then we continued.
You know, one of those things when it's like, oh, it's not working. Maybe it's not going to work.
Oh, mate.
Maybe this is it. And then then we were laughing about something.
Yeah, something just kicked in.
And then we laughed so hard. We're like, hold on. We just, that was a stronger than usual. For what that joke was, that we, you know, we shouldn't have laughed that hard.
Yeah, something ain't right, basically. But you could literally feel the chemicals going in your body, and it just penetrated. And it just took over, and from there it was uncontrollable, and it just made you feel so happy and joyful. It was really, really surreal, and it literally lasted for about how long? I would say between 45 minutes to an hour.
It's the first time in my life, because you know I've always been jealous of people that are able to have a real, real good laugh, you know, tears coming out and stuff. And on this, I couldn't control it. And you know when you're just gasping for air and, you know, like tears are flooding out of your eyes. I was just celebrating the fact that I'm having the best laugh of my life. Do you know what I mean? It was awesome.
That was great. Yeah, that was crazy. And it was really, really, I would say, an experience that obviously, that was my first time. And I've done it twice after that as well.
Yeah.
yeah. Even three times after. I've done it twice where it's really kicked in before, but those times more psychedelic, and it was just incredible, I have to say. Like, when you talk about how it makes you feel a connection with the earth, and it's just crazy.
Because you look at the stars, isn't it?
Yeah, the stars is one thing.
Believe me, when you look at the stars on mushrooms.
Yeah, it made me... it was weird because...
It is amazing to know that usually the first time people do mushrooms or the first time you eat truffles or something like that, you always think, oh, this is it? Oh, okay, whatever, I guess it didn't kick in. And then as soon as you say that...
See you later. See you later, mate.
Yeah, when it kicks in, you know about it. And then everything was just enhanced. Everything, my sound became more enhanced, my vision became more enhanced. And the stars as well, because I had went home and I was smoking out my window and it was late night. It must have been about 11 or 12 o'clock, and the stars just seemed so amazing. Like I've never looked at it for that long in my life. At least half an hour is at my window thinking, this is weird, but I don't care. This is lovely.
Isn't it interesting to know that everything you described is the act of living in the moment?
Yeah,
appreciate the life that you live.
Yeah, and it makes me appreciate it much more because I'm thinking, how come I don't feel like that when I'm not eating them or I haven't taken anything? You know what I mean? I want to feel like that at all times. But when you come off it, you feel like, shit, man, I want it to come back. I remember that night I was watching, like, literally, I was just putting on the TV and everything with the sound and the picture, everything was just crazy. And when you think, it's like you can delve into your mind and go through different channels and literally open different doors and fly and do crazy shit. And it's like, wow.
The fact you could do that in this whole time.
Yeah, it is really, it's really incredible. It really is. And when they say, like, people have bad trips and all that kind of stuff, like, I kind of understand, because as soon as your brain thinks about bad thoughts or when it starts delving, I remember at the time...
You can go into some dark places, but...
Yeah,
like,
at the time...
Dark places.
Yeah, because where I lived at the time, I had like a big field at the back, so you can see the stars quite brightly because there isn't many lights. And so, at the time, for some reason, there was like, in the bad thoughts, there was like vampires and werewolves, and all of a sudden, the trees started coming towards me and everything started looking evil. So I was like, shit, stay away from the bad thoughts.
It's all the power of the mind.
You have to, man.
I was like, stay away from that shit.
Sometimes you play around with it. And you're like, you know what? Let me.
Yeah.
You're like, nah.
Well, I gotta say, when I first consumed mushrooms, my dosage was 3.5 grams of some very veiny, blue veiny stuff, and I couldn't even be sad. The level of joy and happiness I was feeling, it wouldn't let me feel negative or think about messed up the shit or anything like that. I mean, gradually as I continued returning and consuming mushrooms over and over again, I would be able to get used to it and I would be able to start thinking freely. But the first initial trip, wow, it wouldn't even let me. It felt like the presence of a loving mother, to be honest. Like, it just wants you to feel good. It wants you to let go of all of those things that made you feel bad. It's just like, hey man, you're beautiful. All these things that you're thinking about.
What kind of mushrooms did you consume, or where was it?
Oh, it was in Toronto, Canada, Ontario. So I'm guessing whoever grew these babies, they grew them in some basement in some urban house, and they grew them well. I mean, they were white. And they had a golden cap, and they were very veiny, blue veins, I remember. Wow.
Okay.
Because the ones that we had were like kind of, they looked processed.
Yeah, they were almost like, it was like a raw peanut. And they were kind of like chewy, like.
They were plasticky. They were little bits of like plastic.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, it was almost like a root. You're talking like a fresh root.
Yeah, what you're describing is like more a natural mushroom.
Yeah, and I heard
it looks the shape of a little mushroom when you eat that.
Yeah. So you guys basically had like a ball of mashed up
mushrooms? No, it was more, they come in like little boxes, and that would say more, it's more like root. That's what it is, basically.
For me, almost. It looked like a little bit of grey candy, but it tasted disgusting, you know?
Yeah, how I would describe it is like a raw peanut that hadn't been cooked yet, so it had that texture where it was like crunchy, but still a bit wet as well, you know, so it's not cooked, but it had the weirdest taste. And it's funny because I've consumed about 4 or 5 times now, and they all have that similar taste as well.
Yeah, and I've not been able to stomach down mushrooms since. The first one was the only time that it's worked. The next two times, just that as soon as that taste comes in my mouth, all my triggers are like, yeah, get this out of me. And it's I can't hold it down.
That doesn't surprise me, to be honest. The taste of mushrooms are very horrendous. I mean, it takes some serious commitment to actually go through the process and courage.
I mean, you're so powerful and you're so significant. Why can't you be delicious as well? Do you know what I mean?
Because in life, I think you have to go through the shit to get
indeed.
You know what I mean? You have to go through hardships to get through.
Anybody that I speak to about mushrooms, I always tell them, you know, I'll always recommend that, because boy, mushrooms take you to a whole other level. Because now I always say to G, I was like, man, when are we going to do mushrooms again? Or like the last time I done it was actually my girlfriend in Amsterdam, and that was her first time as well. And she loved it, boy. She was on a trip for a good 2 or 3 hours, but her shit, she was jumping through time and space, and she was doing all sorts of stuff, man. It was like her shit was
But you know the thing with mushrooms, what I found out quite recently is that the mushroom doesn't actually create any of this. It actually stops your brain from producing something.
Yeah,
and your brain's always like that. Yeah, and what it stops producing means your normal brain continues as usual. And this is what you're seeing yourself. You're actually viewing the universe through these, you know, maybe these layers of
lens.
Yeah, these goggly eyes have been removed.
And it is very apparent to like the process of which it does that, and really makes you think: is the brain really producing consciousness, or is the brain receiving consciousness and then relaying it out through the body? I mean,
That's what I think it is.
It's really, when you change the frequency, when you change the chemical balance of the brain, it doesn't necessarily mean you're screwing your brain up. And while you're doing these things, your brain is still operating as if you're fully functioning as a normal person. It's just the different types of chain of chemicals, the different receptors being on and off. That's all it is. And the fact that even exists should mean that we are supposed to be using that stuff. We are supposed to be able to experiment with these plants. I mean, I don't know if you guys know this. I mean, you probably do, but marijuana, the component of marijuana, THC, tetrahydrocannabinoid, that can only work within the mind because of the fact that it goes through a specific receptor between the neurons, and that receptor is only being able to intake THC. Mm-hmm. So
is that the pineal?
You can look that up. The THC receptor, it could only intake THC. And where can you get THC from? Marijuana. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing I know of you could get THC from.
Yeah.
There could be other ways, but like, it seems to be that nature designed it from the DNA for us to communicate, whether human.
That's why it makes sense, because when you talk about the whole, you know, the government tried to make you unaware of things and tried to make you not think so much into things. That's why they tried to ban it, because that shit enhances your thought and it makes you think more about things and issues, and so it just makes sense why they try to make it illegal in so many places around the world.
Well, so all the points that your video brings up, David, they highlight these crucial points that a lot of people are not aware of. And, you know, they're almost asleep to, because if you get it, then you really get it. Do you know what I mean? You can't, like, be half and half.
Yeah, there's no gray area.
No gray area, because once you're like, wow, once you understand the importance of the universe and the earth, and once you start putting these pieces together, and you arrive, like I was saying earlier, you arrive at these simple conclusions. And like when you click certain videos, it's like, or the videos that you've talking about, it's like there's certainly things that, you know, the ideas that we've entertained ourselves.
But it's an amazing feeling when you thought about these things and when someone else is talking about them, it's like, whoa, it's almost as if it's a confirmation kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, and it's very rewarding when you share it with someone as well. And you know, when you come across someone that has similar thoughts and you're sharing this energy, because like you said, we're all these, when you go to the subatomical, you know, we're just all these little particles.
Yeah, and what energy we put out definitely will attract others who put out that type of energy, and will create possibly more people who will create that kind of energy. It's all connected. I mean, have you guys heard of this experiment? I don't know what it's called specifically. Just type in a chimpanzee experiment, islands. It's something to do with these chimps who were on one island. They were given a type of test, mm-hmm. and then no chimps recorded across the whole world could do this one test. Mm-hmm. But then eventually they figured it out, and then all of a sudden all the chimps across the earth started figuring out. Mm-hmm. It's almost as if like when one person starts thinking in one way, it's almost inevitable for the other person to think the other way, because it seems to be that some particles, whether they're expanded through the universe or expanded throughout the planet, they're still connected to each other. Yeah. They still have the effect. Yeah. String theory type of thing.
Yeah. It's one way of looking at it. You know, it's because you kind of say it a bit blasé, as if that's, you know, everyone, oh yeah, so it's... Because I think I heard a similar test with rats, but, you know, where, you know, they learn a skill one place and then everyone else picks it up, you know, yeah. without them getting a contact. But I've also seen a couple of, you know, stories debunking that as well. You know,
oh, yeah.
So, I mean, again, it could be coincidence that at that time, you know, something in the environment changes where everyone has to kind of react in that manner. You know, there's a million things that the changing climate, the change in diet, the change in so many things, and that's all of a sudden people are doing that. I mean, the rats or whatever are doing that.
I'm just thinking more so this string theory, where you change a particle, and somewhere across the universe, another particle will change, which also comes in terms with the whole fractal geometry. I mean, the way fractals work is if the whole thing is connected, you change a tiny bit of the whole pattern, and the whole pattern will change. And it's almost as if it's like the butterfly effect. Mm-hmm. I mean, every little action, every breath you take, you mm-hmm. could change something. You know, like every how should I say this? Imagine this. Imagine all the movements of all the living things happening at once. The movements of my hands moving right now when I'm talking, the cat jumping around, the birds flying, the trees moving. Let's say all of that all together creates wind, like creates air turbulence, creates a little mini type of air turbulence that over time, mm-hmm. through all the distortions of the molecules, whatever, could create like what we see as storms or whatever. I mean, I know storms
like the butterfly effect, basically.
Yeah, basically, but it's just a really. I'm just trying to explain it where it's not just a butterfly flapping its wings and then it creates weather. I'm trying to see how that could actually happen through all the movements of things. How could it all affect the whole entire global network of planet, whether through the weather, whether consciously. It's all up to debate, really. I mean, we're all just monkeys, just trying to figure out what we are. You know what I mean? So it's something that we got to look into. And I don't think our instruments can fully detect all the things that are there and all the methods we're using to try to figure out how things work. I don't think it's all necessarily 100% perfect. So it could be things that we don't perceive that exist.
Yeah, but what this has highlighted to me recently was when someone asked me, well, what religion are you? So I've always thought myself to, well, I was raised, you know, Christian, and then I became a Catholic just before secondary school. And then, you know, ever since, you know, the whole zeitgeist issues, that whole debacle, the whole idea of Jesus and Mary, that completely, you know, because there wasn't fact or proof, I no longer prayed to them. And I still prayed to God, but the God that I was praying to now wasn't, you know, like how I had previously imagined him. It was more the whole, because I knew about the universe and we were learning more about that all the time. Mm. You know, that all that is God. You know, and so when I was explaining it to a mate the other day, he said, well, there's actually a word for that, and that's pantheism. And I was like, nah, that's not me. You know, I'm still Catholic, but I have these kind of beliefs. And he's like, nah, So I checked it up, and he says, pantheism is the belief that the universe is identical with divinity, or that everything composes an all-encompassing immanent God.
Huh. That's interesting. They have a label for that,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. I had no idea.
I mean, the way I am, I don't like to be labeled. I don't like to be categorized. I'm sure you don't like to be either. I mean, the way I see us all, we're all just living life forms on this planet, spinning around a star. One star out of 500 billion that's in this one galaxy, all containing planets, probably with their own life forms of sophisticated...
No, I absolutely agree. And, you know, that's why the whole idea of the Bible, I think it's selfish for us to think that, you know, out of all these galaxies, we get this book of God and he doesn't talk about any of it.
Yeah.
You know, where does he mention Pluto or, you know... Or the Andromeda galaxy and all these other, there's nothing. So it beggars to believe. Do you know what I mean? When out of everything that could be mentioned, none of that is. And then when you find out more and more through science what there actually is out there, and like you said, the possibility of, you know, one universe within another in this infinite kind of thing. But I'd like to believe that at the top of all of that, there is a divine being, this God.
Oh, definitely.
You know, so that's why this pantheism is actually, you know, kind of appropriate. And although I didn't think of it till very recent, I was like, I think that, you know, I've arrived there myself based on the kind of, you know, the search for the truth. You know, like the whole Descartes thing where you put everything in it, or you take a barrel of apples, you throw them all out. And then you only put them back into the barrel when you can be sure that they're not molded. Otherwise, you know, it will affect the rest.
Yeah.
And so that kind of thinking is quite healthy. You know, I love to see all these amazing videos on YouTube, but you have to like kind of be weary about what you let yourself believe, and at the same time, you know, be open. You know, think outside the box.
Of course. I mean, the way I ended up being, I mean, through my experiences as a human being, I simply just filtered, I should guess that's the best word to say, through all the information, through different perspectives, from different religions, different cultures, and I just put them all together, and I could see how some religions were made by an empire that wants to control, and how they use morality and codes that would appeal to the people and that they would abide by it. And I could also see how some other religions were rooted by some psychedelic experiences. I mean, like Hinduism, I could totally see how through the worship of the cow and through the gods that they portrayed and their descriptions of them, I could totally see the psychedelic connection. I mean, consider this. I don't know. I'm pretty sure no one's ever told you guys. I laughed when I first heard this. The word holy cow and holy shit actually came from the fact that a specific type of cow in India, when it produces feces, the chemical components in that feces in the soil actually creates the proper nutrients for mycelium to thrive in it, and it will create a certain type of mushroom. And they would ingest this mushroom, and I guess they would have their psychedelic experiences. Yeah. And I guess, holy cow, holy shit! that's something very real. And I think very
holy shit. You know what I mean?
I think our entire species evolved, had the ability to evolve that specific way in the mind because of our contact with psychedelics. I think that the very first cave art was created by people, our descendants, our ancestors, I should say, who were who were in the experience of a psychedelic plant. Well, they were open to a whole different perspective of the universe, and that evolved their mind, and that became human beings. I mean, like, have you guys seen Bill Hicks's stand-up when he talks about the stoned ape theory, which Terrence McKenna also talks about, where the human was just basically an ordinary ape, and we were pretty dull. We had the same brain size, but the neurons weren't properly connected in the way that would make us sophisticated and intelligent as we would look at it. And apparently, through the, by chance or by coincidence or whatever you want to call it, we ingested these psychedelics and we started painting our experiences on the walls. Some of the paintings are actually pretty, they're pretty, I mean, people would say they're aliens. I mean, I'm saying that there are other dimensional entities that they've possibly seen on mushrooms, but the same descriptions that they would paint are the same things people nowadays would see on ayahuasca, on iboga, on peyote, substances of which come from the Amazon, or come from a jungle, or come from nature.
That's another thing that me and you were trying to investigate a few months back, the whole ayahuasca thing. Me and him were looking online and trying to find some people to do it because we wanted to go, man. Really want to do it.
Oh, yeah. I want to go to Peru ASAP. And
yeah, we want to go.
Machu
Picchu, baby.
I've been to Peru before a few years back, but I still never knew about all this kind of psychedelics and stuff, but I definitely want to go back and do some of that big time.
Oh, yes. I believe that anyone who is a world leader, or Graham Hancock said this, and I believe it too, they should do ayahuasca 10 times before they even consider leading a country. I think we need a leadership who has the empathy, who has the awareness, who has all the prerequisite knowledge to then lead a people or lead a society, which I don't even consider the leaders we have now.
It's good, but it's like Uruguay. Look at Uruguay. The president had some good, he had some balls to do what he done, you know?
Yeah, that impressed me. I was actually, at first I thought it was like internet bogus, but then
that's what
it was
actually
real, and I was like, whoa, he actually did that.
Have you seen the Vice video on it?
Yes, and I was so happy to know
really
that.
Really good.
I was so happy. That's the first step of, that's the first country on Earth right now.
And the way the president explained it at the end is so good in terms of them being, you know, like you say, the first and trying to be the pioneer for a lot of other changes, not just that.
It's like a domino effect, and thank goodness for him, he started the domino effect.
Literally.
But the scary thing is, the you know, the company Monsanto, we've mentioned it actually on two or three podcasts now. You know, the first one was at least with Sophia, we actually went into it quite a bit. And even in The Simpsons, you know, in the season 25, the latest one, I was watching it and they don't say Monsanto, they say Monsamo or something. They change it. But then Lisa does this whole thing on GMO foods. You know, and she's actually actually for them, you know, after she reads into it a bit. But
really?
Yeah.
What? Okay, anyway, sorry.
It's so annoying that this company that, in my mind, and I haven't researched, you know, it, but, you know, Joe Rogan, you know, he's mentioned it a couple of times, and I've then read on a couple of bits and bobs, you know, like the sick stat in India where the farmers were killing themselves, the suicide rate was like one every 20 seconds.
Like, it's completely frustrating, like, when you know about it, and to know that the majority of the world doesn't, and they're just like, oh, whatever, I'm just going to continue with what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It's crazy to know that there's a corporation controlling the food.
Yeah, they sold them this seed that wouldn't, like, they would only produce one yield. And at the end of its life, at the end of that 1 year, you know, they're thinking that this is going to be, all right, this is me set for next year. And then they find out the seed, it just dies. So then the next year they have no money, and then, you know, can be bought out at a cheap price. And it's just disgusting. And because of this, you know, the stat was one person in every 20 seconds. Well, a farmer. An Indian farmer was killing themselves. Insane.
It's the ruining lives, the ruining people's whole livelihood, the ruining the natural way of farming, the ruining many freaking things. And the fact that they're actually changing the DNA structure of these foods will actually change the biology of our cells. It's not just us eating plentiful food. This will actually have an effect, and it's never been done before at this extent ever in human history.
No, but what the president of Uruguay has done is good. It's excellent. But when you find out that it's he's saying that they're going to ban every other marijuana production, but they're going to legalize their own production of it, and it's Monsanto that are going to be doing the GMO weed.
Oh, what?
Yeah, I've got the article on my Facebook, mate. You know, I know I like to comment. Sophia put it up, and I mentioned it on a comment. Yeah, wow. How messed up is that? Because they know the potential of it, and so if every country starts to do it, but on the with the understanding that it's corporations like Monsanto that have the monopoly over it, you know, it's like, what the hell? Like, because you just mentioned the GMO foods, it changes the human body as well. But what about the GMO marijuana, the medicinal marijuana, whatever you want to call it?
I'm thinking this one actually, like, okay, this is the outcome I could see from this type of thing. They're gonna legalize it. They're going to regulate it. They're going to turn it like cigarettes, basically. They're going to put their own chemicals to suppress it. But then, not too long down the road, I guarantee someone's going to die from it. And then they're going to make some huge deal. And then they're going to re-legalize it. That's the way I see this going. I think it's happened before. Hemp has been re-legalized in 1940s to fight. To fight in World War II to supply the soldiers with hemp, so hemp could be used for ropes and outfits, all that stuff. And the fact that they've done this again just makes me think that it's going to happen again. They're just going to do this, realize it, and then they're going to actually destroy the plant. It's going to destroy the actual spiritual purpose of this plant. I mean, the feeling we get when we get quote unquote high of smoking marijuana, it's not like shooting up heroin into your body, and then you're just feeling this what I would call an actual drug high. This is cells.
Spiritual.
It's like spiritual, yeah.
It's the definitely cells spiritual.
Yeah, man. Like, it's nature's way of communicating to mankind, and I can't allow this type of government that we have, or I can't stand to think that this type of government we have would legalize it and then just destroy it. That's just so sad.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. It's a step in the right direction.
It is a step in the right direction, but I just don't want Monsanto controlling it. I want people to be like, no, screw Monsanto. I'm glad there's these protests raising awareness on the fact that they're corrupting our food supply and corrupting the whole ecosystem of the planet, but there's not enough to actually boycott the whole company. Like, we need to use our power of consumerism to bring down these corporations that are screwing up the planet. I mean, it's all a simple act of not buying oil, not buying Monsanto.
Yeah,
foods.
But that's not, you know, that's a good idea, but it's not practical. I mean, I don't see that, because they say that, you know, you vote by the way you spend your dollar or your pound or whatever, but
it's not enough, you know, like it's something small, I know, but like...
But you know, it's the things like the internet, Twitter and Facebook that's helping, because, you know, the guy from the Young Turks was on the Joe Rogan podcast. You know, his views versus Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh saying, I got 14 million, you know, Americans. And in fact, the Young Turks were getting twice as many views as he was. And he's like, you know, and it's a free content stuff that you can see online. Whereas they're paying this guy, you know, millions, so... It goes to show the power of the internet and how you can share information, even like podcasts and you know your videos, where you can in a form that's very digestible to everyone. Really, you know, you make it very interesting. And you know what? Actually, I want to. There's a certain part of your movie that I'll just play right now. Towards the end, just
billions of years ago.
What I want to kind of portray here is the kind of feeling. You know, that when you encompass the visuals with the audio and with the message that's new to someone, you know, that NLP kind of stuff, like every time you hear it again, you just kind of like this whole mindset kicks back in.
Yes, I know what you're saying. It's the music, the visuals came from movies that touched me deeply. So glad that I represented the way I feel, projected that through this documentary for people to feel too.
Nice. I think I watched it as well a couple of days back, and I rewatched it again today. It is really, really good. I've watched loads, but it puts it in like you say, quite a simple way for people to understand. But like you say, it's more of a platform to delve into for it to you know what I mean, to get deeper yourself.
And I'm actually making a sequel. I'm writing down the outline, the layout.
Oh, you're a good man.
Yeah, man. I'm trying to just make a series of these things.
Don't give yourselves to brutes.
Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, or what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You, the people, have the power. The power to create machines. The power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful. To make this life a wonderful adventure. Let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight to free the world. To do away with national barriers. To do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason. A world where science and progress will lead to all men's happiness. Let us all unite.
Must reconnect to our roots, our spirit.
Amen. Amen, brother.
And that was the words from Charlie Chaplin, a great man.
Really? Charlie Chaplin?
That was Charlie Chaplin, yes. He was very conscious and conscientious about the world and the corruption. And if he's talking all that at that time, 1945, just imagine what he was saying now.
Charlie Chaplin, what's that fucking, bro? That's surprising.
Oh yeah, trust me, he's a comedian, but he's a brilliant comedian, like many these days. Louis C.K., Bill Hicks, George Carlin, all of them, man. Yeah, we have some philosophical comedians in our time, and it's very funny to think that the comedians are the ones speaking the truth. That's very reminiscent on, that's very representative on our society.
It's a medium that resonates with a lot of people, you know, comedy, especially the comedians that, you know, like, I don't give a shit kind of comedians where you can just
Chris
go out there.
A bit of Chris Rock. He tells it how it is.
I think it's, we value those who speak what we think, Richard Pryor, we are too afraid to speak out what they say. That's what it is, man. We are totally in a state of, we're just admiring them because they are really our inner selves. They represent that voice inside that just wants to just shout out the truth and just tell it what's good, you know? Trust me, I think I want to actually start doing a form of stand-up. I think it would be fun to integrate the truth in a way that people could, as you said, digest fluently. And I think it would be funny to have it to be, you know, funny. Obviously, I think it would be funny. I think it would be great to have it funny and intelligent at the same time, and to just have another person doing that.
Yeah, that's why the Joe Rogan podcast, you know, the fact that he's a comedian, you know, like, and, you know, when he gets people like Joey Diaz on, and, you know, just how raw it gets, it's just like, that's the beauty of the podcast. It's like you're chilling with a few mates, and, you know, there's always one that's a bit more vulgar than the rest, but everyone finds it funny.
Yeah, it's great to see different perspectives on things, different pieces of information you learn from people. Like, I just listened to one with Steve Maxwell, and I'm still listening to that one every time I start drawing. I just have it playing in the background. Yeah,
the kettlebell guy.
And I learned from that conversation that you don't get proper nutrients from eating broccoli raw. You have to blend it in a blender to extract the proper cellulose to digest it to get the most nutrients. I would have never known that if I didn't listen to that. So the things you could learn from conversations, simple conversations, beautiful. It's a beautiful thing. He actually interviewed one of my favorite author, actually, the one who shared my documentary on YouTube, Graham Hancock. Mm. And in that podcast alone, the view of our civilization, how it formed, it seems that we were once a part of an ancient civilization that the pyramids and other structures are now the remnants of, and there's actually structures underneath the shores of Japan, Japanese underwater pyramids. Oh, there's pyramids that used to be there 10,000 years ago, and that would suggest that there used to be a civilization that got wiped out by what appears to be an asteroid that caused us to plunge into an ice age again.
What kind of civilization that has these, you know, these synchronous pyramids all over the globe?
Structures.
Huge. That we, you know, everyone says, oh, you can't explain with science how you blah, blah, blah. But regardless, it's these amazing structures. Like, Jason and I have been there and we've stood in front of the pyramids and we stood in front, we've touched it, you know, we've climbed it, we've gone underneath
it. You literally get overwhelmed by the sheer, like, size of it and how small it makes you feel. And when you try to comprehend how they built the shit.
Yeah.
And arguably, 10,000, 12,000 years ago, we're saying, I mean, people say 4, but, you know what I mean, we definitely think it's more, but...
Yeah,
it's crazy to think that it was built with the technology and that they had, you know what I mean?
Which was apparently, according to our science, non-existent. Mm-hmm. They just think it was created 2,000, 4,000 years ago. I mean, or 2,000 BC, I mean. But the 4,000 BC, I should say. But it's not. The structure is, when you look at it, the same material that's made out of the pyramid, the limestone, is the same type of a structure and massive blocks that they used to make the Sphinx. Now, the Sphinx is covered with these deep gashes that could have only been caused by rainfall. But when has Egypt ever had consistent rainfall to cause, like, a 2-foot gash in the structure of a Sphinx made of limestone?
It was at least 12,000 years? Is that it's not a John Anthony West. It was, is that Egyptologist that lives in Cairo? I remember when he came onto the podcast as well.
Yeah.
I showed you about that because, you know, we went to the Cairo Museum and I was actually trying to look for that guy and seeing, you know. But yeah, I mean, I, when you hear information like that, it totally, you have to rewrite the history books, you know, because a lot of, even when we went there, our guide said the pyramids were between 4,000 and 5,000 years old. He didn't even know himself. And this is one of the local Egyptian guides. And, you know, so this whole theory of the rainwater limestone, it's, you know, if that holds true, then you're right. It's, you know, it's a degradation, natural degradation from the weather that could only have taken place during a time where they had rainfall in that area.
Exactly, which was before the end of the last ice age. So that takes us back to a huge stretch of time. And the implications of that... So that would mean that, okay, picture this. The human skull, the human body has been anatomically modern the way it is right now for 100,000 years. Before that, it was a bit different. We were less evolved. But we were the exact same shapes and structure the way we are right now from the point of 100,000 years ago. We could have indeed turned into an advanced society that was worldwide with high technology that wasn't like ours at all. And it could have been, which it was, they have the evidence from the fragments of the radiation of the meteorite that hit, the type of mineral was, I forget the word, it was like thyramat, I don't know the mineral, I need to look that up, but the type of mineral that was left by that meteorite suggests that the impact caused the ice age and that this wiped out whatever civilization was there. So I guess that the human race scattered and they ended up in different parts of the world, creating their own culture, his own language, which eventually now we are here. And I think ever since that meteor struck the Earth, it disconnected us, or not it, but the action of it doing that caused us to be disconnected from our roots, from knowing who we are. And that's why we're so messed up as a species right now. We're lost.
But the other way that Joe Rogan puts it is that, you know, we're not lost. If you look at the Earth as a living organism, as your video puts it.
Right.
You know, if you were an alien and you were to visit the Earth and you saw, you know, the natural grasslands, the rainforests, the jungle, etc.
Yeah.
You'd say, okay, I get it. That's what it's meant to be. And then there's this growth, this you know, mold on the sandwich, where whatever you do to destroy it, hurricanes, fires, tornadoes, it just regrows.
Yeah.
And it's covering the Earth. So if it's this living organism, you know, how much can it take? You know, how much of this infection can it take before, you know, it starts to cut out? You know, what happens when that cuts out?
Well, okay, well, the way I look at it is this. This Earth will never, in fact, die. This Earth has survived things that were much worse than what you're doing to it. All I am simply saying is, what I'm simply saying right now is this. We and our state of being right now is infectious to the planet, but I don't necessarily think it means that that's our purpose. Like, I think that because of social conditioning from like the mindset that the human body has developed through the ages of living in these caves after that meteorite hit the planet, the different types of people that form, whether if you lived in the jungle, you were generally more passive than those who were being brought up in the desert or in the mountains like our ancestors in the Swedish mountains of Norway. I mean, the Norway mountains. Swedish mountains of Norway. But I think that the environment actually changed the brain and caused us to be more aggressive. And you could see that in our society, how that aggressive behavior caused us to be more warlike than how I theorize we were actually more passive in other civilizations. We were connected. We weren't killing each other. It was through chance that our actions have been made to be what they are right now. And I don't think that was our purpose. I think that's just the way it is because of the environment, the way it shaped the brain.
Also, I wanted to ask a question. You talked about part two. When is that coming?
Well, that's going to come hopefully before fall. I mean, I'm going to be working on it all summer. I just need to get my guys to make the CGI footage for the atoms and stuff. But basically, I'm going to try to aim for fall. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good, man. We'll be looking out for that, definitely.
Yeah, and I had a big list of questions I wanted to ask you. I didn't get through any of them.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, we just... But I think, you know, it's...
We need a part two of this anyway.
Yeah, man.
Definitely going to have another
part. I mean, you know, I definitely love the flow of tonight, you know. It's
2 hours went past quick.
Oh, snap. Really?
Yeah.
What? I didn't even look at the clock.
That's what I'm saying, man. 2 hours.
Wow. Okay. Yo, that's just shows. Yo, when we have a lot to say, and I don't even feel like I said nothing. You know, I feel
yeah.
like I
just, no. You know what? I hear you, brother. But you know, very quickly, you know, I guess I should have asked you. But what inspired you? Why did you get into this? You know, tell us about that very quickly.
Why did I get into this? From childhood, man, I just felt like this earth has been messed up, and I felt like I just wanted to change it straight up. I know that sounds corny, but that's just what it is. I just felt like I had this need, purpose to change the way things are. Like, I don't think it's right the way we're destroying the earth, so I just want us to reconnect to it now. So this.
It's funny, a lot of religions and cultures, you know, come to that conclusion as well. You know, that's
what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Buddhism has it pretty much aligned with what I'm striving to, not in a complete form, but just the essential sense of we are beings having a human experience. We are here, so might as well our actions better be kind ones rather than negative ones. We want to create a better world. We want to live in, like, you know, why do we want a world full of famine? Like, we don't want that, but it's our actions that's allowing that to happen. So with intelligence, with empathy, with simple acts of kindness, it ripples into eternity to change our future, man. Yeah, man.
Yeah, what?
If we're closing right now, I just gotta say, if there's a movie that everyone should watch, it's called Cloud Atlas.
Tom Hanks and Halle Berry.
Yes, that will smack your mind across the face.
Because I wanted to watch that film badly, and then I heard a few bad reviews on it, and a few people said it wasn't that great, and then it just put me off. But I really wanted, when I saw like what it was about and them going through different worlds and shit, I wanted to watch it. But it's, now that you've said, I definitely want to give it a watch.
Trust me, my friend, that movie is greatly underrated. The fact that it has no Oscars is a disgrace to filmmaking. Just get past the first 40 minutes, and then everything will make sense.
Strong words, my friend. Very strong words.
Yeah, I need to see it badly, man.
Yeah, man. Trust me, there's a lot of things in this world that are not recognized, and it's sad, and they need to be.
Yeah. You know, well, thanks a lot for doing this.
Thank you for having me, man. Thank you for doing these podcasts, for sharing information to the people. You guys are awesome, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I love the ability that you just see a video that you like or you hear something, you reach out and they say, yes, I'll come and, you know, share my thoughts with you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, definitely, man.
It's been a pleasure to you guys as well. See you guys next time, eh?
All right, man. I'll send you all the stuff when it's all up and then we'll connect.
All right, man. I'll send you a few yoga workouts.
You do that, brother.
Yeah, man. Speak to you again.
This one right here is for the...
Good night, guys.
All right, man. Take care. Take care.
Some of the smartest dummies can't read the language of Egyptian mummies. And a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youths, cause it's not like the future depends on it. Or say the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee them a make big money. This is how the media pillages, on TV the picture is savages and villages, and the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids, stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a khaki pants and all of a sudden you are say a Indiana Jones, and I tip out the gold and tip out the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and I ever known, with the worst on this place that the world can see, and that's all that will ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like it'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them gonna flee when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic lineage where them still can't defeat and them coulda never clone. A spiritual DNA that prints in my soul and I will forever own, Lord. Are we born knowing all? We growing wiser? Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flat, if you went too far you would fall off. Now the earth is round, if the shape changed again everybody would have started laugh. The average man can't prove up most of the things that he chooses to speak of, and still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek of. Scholars teach in universities and claim that they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose stop running. And the rich get stitched up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with the wet mud. Can you read signs? Can you read stars? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows even though you drive cars? Can you survive against all odds?
Bible, who wrote the Quran? And was it a lightning storm that gave birth to the earth and then dinosaurs were born? Who made up words? Who made up numbers? And what kind of spell is mankind under? Everything on the planet we preserve and can it. Microwave it and try it, no matter what, we'll survive it. What's you? What's man? What's human? Anything along the land we consuming, eating, deleting, ruin. Trying to get paper, what? Gotta have land, gotta have acres, so I can sit back like Jack Nicholson, watch play the game like the Lakers. In a world full of 52 fakers, gypsy seances, mystical prayers. You superstitious, throw salt over your shoulders, make a wish for the day, cuz like somebody got a doll of me, sticking needles in my artery, but I can't feel it. Sometimes it's like part of me, but I got a real big spirit, a fearless. Don't you try to grab hold of my soul. It's like a military soldier since 7 years old. I held real dead bodies in my arms, felt their body turn cold. Oh, why are we born in the first place if this is how we gotta go? Damn. Savali. Patience. Yeah.